The Tom Woods Show, episode 1365.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I really hope you'll be vacationing with me this July in Alaska aboard the Contra Cruise. Bob Murphy and I are hosting the Libertarian Event of the Year. Alaska's on your bucket list, you know that, and what better way to visit than with a great crew of like-minded, wonderful folks, headlined by our special guests Gene Epstein and Brad and Deidre Berzer. Grab your cabin over at ContraCruise.com. And remember, Bob Murphy and I will be doing a live debate that will not be made available to the public, with Gene Epstein moderating. You've got to reserve that cabin. Head over to ContraCruise.com and we'll see you there. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Before I dive into my topic for today, just a quick note about a couple of upcoming episodes you're going to enjoy. I've got David Stockman coming back on the program. He's got a new book we're going to talk about the Trump economy. And Patrick Moore of Greenpeace. You remember him? We had him on in the past, and he's been pretty outspoken these days against the Green New Deal. So it'll be great to get him back on the program. We got some good stuff coming up. You're really going to enjoy it. This weekend, we got a bonus episode that I promised you coming out that you'll definitely enjoy. If you like any of my Catholic stuff, and if you like our conversations about political, like Catholic politics, more or less, church politics, it's a good, good conversation with Roger McCaffrey, one of my favorite guests on any topic, pretty much. And then the other thing I want to mention before I dive in here is, if by any chance anybody listening to this program happens to work for YouTube, I have an issue that nobody seems to be able to resolve, and they've more or less given up trying to help me, but it's a real issue, and it should take 3 seconds to resolve, and I can't get anybody to help me. Now, you may say, Woods, how naive. Nobody at these big platforms is going to contact you. But that's not so. I had a very similar situation. I don't want to mention which one it was, with one of these major platforms, and I made a general appeal. And somebody stepped forward and said, yeah, I work there. What can I do for you? And I said, well, this is the problem I'm having. They said, oh, yeah, yeah. And they fixed it within a day. So given that I have a whole bunch of you out there listening, I just thought I'd give it a shot. If you are with YouTube, I really could use some help with what I'm sure will seem to you like a basic thing, but they cannot explain it. They can't take care of it for me. So to reach me, let's see, I don't want to use my regular email address. Let's say you should write to me at bonuses@tomwoods.com. We'll use that account. Write to me at bonuses@tomwoods.com and put YouTube in the subject line, and I would appreciate that. All right. I guess I'm talking about the 3x5 card of allowable opinion today, and I'm going to start with something that happened to me. And I talked myself into this topic at the end of yesterday's episode, and then all through the day yesterday, I was talking myself back out of it again. And then here we are again, and it looks like I'm doing it. So I'm going to start with this, and then we'll just see where it takes us. But what's interesting about this, of course, is not the particulars. It's not, you know, oh, Woods had a run-in with some jerk on Twitter. I mean, obviously, I don't talk about stuff like that unless there's a larger issue at stake. So on Twitter, I have a lot of back and forths with people, and some of them are memorable because they are real issues, and they are a lot of times very, very common misunderstandings of what we believe. So it is useful, even though it's a silly forum, nevertheless, it is useful to take some of those tweets and make whole episodes out of them. And that also reminds me, of course, that you could be driving along and see 5 bumper stickers just in one car ride, each of which would require 3 paragraphs to refute. So a lot of times you can write a tweet and it takes, you know, 2 book chapters to refute it. That's just the nature of the way this works, that oftentimes, or generally, the world is more complicated than a bumper sticker. And it takes, you know, just to say something about the rich or to say something about Bernie Sanders or whatever is very easy to say in one sentence. But the assumptions behind it, the implied history, the implied understanding of how the world works, just all wrong. And it takes a long time to unpack and refute it. And incidentally, I happen to think there's a reason that most cars you see that are covered in bumper stickers, you know how you drive along, you see a car with a bumper sticker, maybe two bumper stickers. But then every now and then you see a car with 100 bumper stickers on it. 9 times out of 10, if not 99 times out of 100, these are all left-wing bumper stickers. Okay, when you have the car that is covered in bumper stickers, this is nearly always a left-wing person. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think it's because now I'm not talking about really smart people on the left, and you can find such people, and some of them can be very interesting to read. But I'm talking about the average run-of-the-mill left liberal. That person is the sort of person whose car is covered with these. Okay, when you see a car covered in bumper stickers, the stickers tend to be all left liberal bumper stickers. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think the reason is that is the way they look at the world. They do think that everything can be reduced to a single sentence. And of course, what accompanies that is this righteous moralizing. Because things are so simple, why I can reduce them to a simple bumper sticker. It becomes easy to divide the world into the wicked and the virtuous. Because look, this is so simple. I've summarized, you know, give everybody X. You know, I put it there in one bumper sticker. Why can you not see that? It must just be sheer perversity. But what if you believe rather that the world is more complicated than that and can't be reduced to a series of bumper stickers? Well, this is not even considered. It must just be that you're such a moral reprobate, you can't see the logic in a one sentence or one phrase summation of an issue. So I think it's because they have a childish, in a, I don't mean childlike, which can be kind of sweet and endearing now and again, but childish view of the world, that everything's simple and society is not complicated and there are absolutely no unintended consequences of violent intervention into society. Yeah, let's just have bumper stickers that tell you, well, do this, do this, do this. Oh, man. All right. I don't even know where the bumper sticker thing came in. Where did that come in? I don't even. Oh, yeah, because I was talking about Twitter. Because Twitter is like somewhat longer bumper stickers. But nevertheless, I could easily do an episode on a bumper sticker the same way I could do one on a tweet. Because as you know, you need to refute some of these misunderstandings that you see on bumper stickers and on Twitter. Well, anyway, my point is that I'm not just dwelling on, oh, my goodness, my feelings were hurt by a tweet. My feelings don't get hurt by tweets, all right? So that's not what's going on here. But there is a larger issue at stake. Now, I hinted at this to you in the last episode, and then I did write a little bit about it in my email newsletter. What happened was, last week I spent several days in New York, and if you, not my fan page, but if you happen to be a Facebook friend of mine, well, I tend to check in when I go to places in New York. So I checked in at The Ferryman, which is such a stunning Broadway play. Absolutely stunning. I think they're running it only through July 7th of this year. If you have any chance of seeing that thing, you owe it to yourself. You are going to be spellbound by that thing. It is absolutely amazing. It takes place in Northern Ireland in 1981, and there's some politics involved, but nothing that's going to make you roll your eyes. It's not like they're going to be lecturing you really all that much about, they're not going to be talking about, should we increase this subsidy to that group? It's nothing like that. It is amazing. So anyway, I checked in there, had a couple of meals with Michael Malice, checked in there. So I was in New York having a good old time, which I do once in a while, just it's a fun place for me to get away. And I know a lot of people and I am a big, big theater buff. And it's just like, I'm like a kid in a candy store when I'm there. So I went up there. And apparently, well, this was right around the time that the terrible shootings in New Zealand took place, those mosque shootings. Well, I got taken to task because apparently the episode that came out either, I guess it must have been the next day, the episode of my show that came out the next day was the one with Frank Karsten called The Discrimination Myth. And boy, was I lectured to on Twitter by one of these humorless automatons who writes this. And I'm going to try not to read this in one of my voices, because when I'm contemptuous of someone, I tend to do voices. So I'm going to try not to. But anyway, he said this. I'm not going to tell you who it is because the guy doesn't matter. He says, "Nothing better illustrates the two sides of libertarianism more than these two podcasts released today. the day after horrible racist violence that killed at least 49 innocent people. Huh, well, gee, this somebody must have been really insensitive. Let's get to the bottom of this. Now, when he says two podcasts, he means two podcast episodes. My podcast is The Tom Woods Show. My podcast episode would be this one, number 1365. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I won't be pedantic about this. So the first one, I don't even know the name of the podcast, but the episode, the first one, the good and virtuous one that was released the day after the mosque shootings was called Liberty and the African-American Experience, parentheses, with Jonathan Blanks. And the description of that episode runs, and he ran this as a graphic, you know, to pit it against the wicked person who released a podcast the next day after the shootings. The description: Jonathan Blanks returns to discuss how versions of liberty were promoted by Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X during the civil rights movement. Well, if you have a good memory, by the way, you will recall that Brian McClanahan and I had a little fun with old Jonathan Blanks back on episode 1332, where we critiqued his article about secession and the illegality of it, allegedly, and all that. And boy, was he beaten and bloodied by the end of that episode. So that's the guy who's being cheered, Jonathan Blanks. Now who, dear listener, who do you suppose released that bad episode, that bad, insensitive episode, the episode you should never consider releasing the day after a mass shooting? Why, yes, it was your host here, the wicked Tom Woods, who released the episode The Discrimination Myth with Frank Karsten on that day. Description: Frank Karsten returns to discuss myths of discrimination that virtually everyone believes and which tend to empower the state. Well, no dispute there, right? Most people do believe these myths about discrimination, and you better believe they empower the state. That's why they're there. The point of these myths is precisely to get the state to intervene in particular ways. That's why the myths exist, is for that exact reason. Well, apparently, I am not allowed to release that episode the day after a mosque shooting. Now, if you can make any sense of that, I would love to hear what you think the connection is. So somebody goes into a mosque and shoots people, and I'm not allowed to say that the gender pay gap is actually not caused by discrimination. I mean, is it obvious to you what the connection between those things would be? Because it's not obvious to me. I don't even get it. I mean, if I'm supposed to, that's just how insensitive Woods is. I don't even understand what I'm alleged to have done, okay? I mean, sometimes at least I get what they say I'm doing. I did this, I said that, I defended this guy, I recommended that book, you know, all these forbidden things I do, right? Over here recommending books I shouldn't recommend, things like that. Or I had so-and-so on the show. Oh my gosh, he talked to so-and-so. I mean, oh my gosh, these people, it must be exhausting being these people. Just the world outrages you every 3 seconds. I mean, I just could not imagine being one of these people. Anyway, I don't even get what I did. What did I do? So apparently, after a mosque shooting, I'm going to write this down and make sure I don't make this mistake again. After a mosque shooting, you can't discuss whether discrimination is the primary cause of disparate outcomes. So educational outcomes, job opportunities, income results. Apparently, you can't talk about that after a mosque shooting because you're almost apparently endorsing mosque shootings if you say that other reasons account for why different groups have different results. Okay. Now, let's point out this has been Thomas Sowell's thesis throughout his entire career. He's written book after book after book explaining precisely this thesis. He'll take two groups in America and he'll say one group is on average 25 years older than the other group. So that first group, even if absolutely everything were held equal, that group's going to be wealthier and going to have, on average, going to have a higher net worth because they have more experience and they've been on this earth longer. Just that. Or he'll say, look at the difference between Japanese Americans and Mexican Americans when we look at women age 18. He says, now 10% of Japanese Americans are married by that age. 50% of Mexican American women are married by that age. So that alone, leave everything else equal, that alone is going to affect their life choices, their career choices, their incomes. So that has nothing to do with discrimination. There's no discriminatory board that orders Mexican women to marry at a certain age. This is just what they want to do. So his point is, the world is so full of factors that account for all different types of differences between people that just simplistically to point and scream discrimination is something that a really, really dumb guy does. And it also makes society, it harms society by creating mistrust where there shouldn't be any, by making it appear that sinister forces are at work when actually, given all these other competing factors, it would be absurd to the point of extreme low IQism to expect there to be absolutely equal outcomes. And he and Walter Williams together have talked about the extent to which private discrimination can account for these sorts of differences. Now, I'll link to my episode with Walter Williams in which we talked about that precise question, because he wrote a book, I believe, called Race and Economics, How Much Can Discrimination Explain? I think it was something like that. And we talked about that here on the show, so I'll link to that. So that's the thesis. Now, are we to believe that Sowell and Williams were, okay, sure, they weren't mosque shooters, but, you know, their argument kind of leads into mosque shootings, or their argument is not, you know, it's kind of reprehensible scholarship, so it really ought to be not discussed after a mosque shooting. Now, again, I'm sorry that the episode makes no sense, because there obviously is no connection between Sowell and Williams and mosque shootings. I get that. It's not my fault, though. These are the sorts of people who come after me. I sometimes wonder, what would it be like to have non-insane people attacking me? It would be interesting for a change of pace. I have not been vouchsafed that particular blessing in my lifetime. Now, let me pause here for a couple of outside details. The same day as the, or I guess, no, I guess it was also the day after the shootings, I sent out an email to my list. It had nothing to do with the shootings, but the subject line was about people who destroyed Libya, which is, you know, majority Islamic. And then the text of the email was about the terrible human toll that the so-called war on terror has taken. Now, no mention of that, of course, because I have a funny feeling this critic, if you can believe this, may not subscribe to my newsletter. So this is another demerit on the part of this critic. Does not subscribe to the Tom Woods newsletter that you folks all subscribe to, which you can subscribe to by going to againstthemob.com, which is your homework assignment. Go to againstthemob.com, sign up, and you'll be on the legendary list, and you get a free ebook, of course. So there's that thing. There's, well, you know, on the other hand, Woods did write this letter on that day. Huh, wonder about that. But also, let's bear in mind, let's suppose this was a terrible, terrible thing for me to have done. And obviously it wasn't. You'd have to be a mental defective to think there was anything terrible about it. But when I go out of town, I line up all the episodes in advance, and then I go on my trip. So I recorded that episode with Frank Karsten down here in Florida, and then it got released while I was walking around town in New York City. I'd totally forgotten about it. I was having lunch with Michael Malice at that very moment. None of this was even on my radar. Well, gee, this episode number is coming out on... I already did that. Now I'm going to take some time off and relax. But again, even if that hadn't been the case, I wouldn't have changed a thing. Now, so-called left libertarians generally don't criticize Thomas Sowell because they know they would never get away with it. They know that most libertarians love Thomas Sowell, and his work is just top-notch. But if you're white and you repeat Sowell's arguments, then apparently you are insensitive to mosque shootings. Because to argue that the world is more complicated than, well, if there are differences between groups, it must be because there's discrimination against one group. Sowell so demolishes that. I mean, you would feel like a complete moron for believing that after you read his books. But you're not allowed to say that, apparently, unless you're Sowell himself. And incidentally, if you listen to that episode, and by the way, our friend, the chairman of the Libertarian National Committee, I won't mention his name, you know who he is, he liked this tweet by this critic of mine. That Woods, he's just not my kind of libertarian. Okay, well, the feeling is mutual. But of course, naturally, he never even listened to the episode, because what we said in the episode was that official state policy has far more systemic and detrimental effects on minorities than private discrimination does. I thought that was the mainstream libertarian position. I thought that was it, that the state doesn't have to actually say, okay, this particular facility is reserved for white people and this one is reserved for black people. It doesn't have to be openly racial in its stated intent, but it can have a racial impact. So whether it's anything like the minimum wage, which then pours more people into the job market to compete with the most disadvantaged people, or occupational licensing in some cases, clearly and obviously hurts the most vulnerable and minorities in particular. So we went in and we went and talked about that. And so apparently that's insensitive. So now I can't even say that state policy can have a disparate racial impact. Like, I can't even say that, because apparently what I'm supposed to say is, yeah, the state, but really it's white bigots who are the problem. Well, I don't believe that. I don't think that is the case. I don't think that's the cause of why there are, certainly it's not, sexism is not the reason that you have the so-called gender pay gap. That has nothing to do with it whatsoever. And I'm not going to be budged on that. I've talked about that on the show. And likewise, as I say, I think the existence of private discrimination in an age of affirmative action is not the explanation for what's going on. But as I say, I do think there are some policies that can, in fact, have a disparate impact on racial minorities that are state-imposed. Again, I don't get what's insensitive about that. I think the guy just didn't listen. He just looked at the title and thought, oh, that Woods, he's such a meanie. Why would he do this? He's just so terrible. Let me go smear him. And then the like a fool, the chairman of the Libertarian Party goes and clicks like on it. So in effect saying, you can't say the state harms minorities, which is what we did say. Well, anyway, I don't want to limit this episode just to that ridiculous situation. So let me say a little something about something else that happened last week. And I actually wrote a little something about this too. And now as I am sitting down, I see that Lou Rockwell actually is running it over at lourockwell.com. It was originally appeared in my newsletter. And that just has to do with this ongoing phenomenon of Tulsi Gabbard. It was interesting to get Stephen Walt's opinion on her in a recent episode. But she was on with Stephen Colbert. And now it's true that Colbert allowed her to explain herself and give her answers. So it's not like it was a cable TV news program. I'll grant him that. But okay, big whoop. What I thought was significant about the interview was, and this is exactly what Caitlin Johnstone correctly pointed out about it, was the tone was all different. The vibe was all different from the type of interview you would have seen if Tulsi had been an approved Democrat, you know, basically a Democrat who is more or less on board with the empire, or at the very least doesn't really make the empire a particularly driving issue. But for Tulsi, this is a key thing, is that the U.S. should not be intervening all over the world, and it's been bad for all concerned. It's been bad for the world. It's been bad for us. And instead of the light humor and the friendly banter that would have ensued had she been any other Democratic candidate, instead we had basically a humorless interview. It was like Walter Cronkite was interviewing her or something. It was a humorless interview on a late night so-called comedy show. And I thought that was significant. So I'm not saying that, you know, he dismembered her on television, but I'm saying that it's quite clear that her views are not welcome. And this is just so interesting about what it says about a little bit about comedy, but a lot about the American establishment. And these comedians are very much part of that establishment. There are ideas that they think are okay and chic and fashionable, and they are the first ones to jump on board. But there are others that they sense are a little bit more radioactive, even though in principle as progressives, they're supposed to favor them. Well, you know, I have a career to think about after all, and so they don't. And I would say the key one in that regard is the empire, is the foreign policy issue. So Tulsi gets on there, and here's what Colbert says to her. Now, He then goes on to say, you know, hey, David Duke is supporting you. What do you think about that? Okay, it's just, there's no way that that's happening to any other candidate. Just no way. And yeah, it's possible that some bad people support occasionally the right thing for the wrong reasons. You could probably think of millions of cases of that, where bad people favor the right thing for the wrong reason. Anyway, let me get back to what Colbert says. He says, if we are not, and he means if we're not engaged in the world, nature abhors a vacuum. And if we're not involved in international conflicts or trying to quell international conflicts, certainly the Russians and the Chinese will fill that vacuum. And we will step away from the world stage in a significant way that, let's see, that's kind of a weird way of phrasing it. He says, and we will step away from the world stage in a significant way that might destabilize the world, because the United States, however flawed, is a force for good in the world, in my opinion. Well, that kind of way of looking at the world is what we could hear from Joe Lieberman or John McCain. I suppose we wouldn't hear that from him anymore, would we? Or Dick Cheney or Bill Kristol or any of these people could have said that. John Kerry, I mean, they all think the same way within certain boundaries. So basically that's what he gives her, is that. And she handled herself well, but she didn't get the kind of treatment you would think somebody would get who holds her views. You would not have thought that suddenly it would come to this. That now pretty much, just as it's been exposed as obviously the worst, least successful, most expensive failure of the federal government, that's when everybody's going to close ranks around it. That's when everybody's going to say, well, you know, this thing has really been going gangbusters. We really got to keep on with this foreign policy. When it's been a catastrophe. Stephen Walt has a chapter in his book, The Hell of Good Intentions, where he just reviews the foreign policy disasters of Clinton, Bush, and Obama. And so here we have them at the absolute nadir of foreign policy right now. And that's when Colbert is going to say, well, you know, we can't fold up now. Ay, ay, ay. So then Caitlin Johnstone, who's a writer on the left, but who's, man, when she's right, as I've said before, she is so right. And she says that this is just one of the worst, or the worst interview she's seen Colbert give, just such an establishment shill kind of interview. She says, surpassing even the time he corrected his own audience when they cheered at James Comey's firing to explain to them that Comey is a good guy now and they're meant to like him. Colbert's show is blatant propaganda for human livestock, and the fact that this is what American quote-unquote comedy shows look like now is nauseating. I thought it was interesting that right around this same time, Jay Leno gave an interview in which he lamented the descent into politics of late-night comedy. He says that he and Johnny Carson always held that you just don't do that. That's not what people want. That's not what they're looking to you for. They're looking to you for entertainment. And you just, if you're going to tell political jokes, just be equal opportunity jokester, and you leave them guessing. And remember how Jay Leno treated Ron Paul back in the 2008 campaign. I guess midway through or toward the end, there was a Fox News. Yeah, I think it might have been in January of 08, where Fox News excluded Dr. Paul from a debate, just outright excluded him. And Jay Leno thought this was unfair, so he flew Dr. Paul out to Los Angeles, which is where they recorded the show at the time, and had him on. And it was very friendly, and he was polite and respectful, and he realized Dr. Paul has a huge audience, and it was very, very pleasant. So it's just that, like, that just seems impossible to imagine these days. Remember when David Letterman had Rand Paul on? And it was just like Colbert with Tulsi Gabbard. There was no warmth, no humor, no banter. It was just, I'm going to hector you. Even though, wouldn't it have made an interesting interview to say, you know, Rand Paul, you're a Republican, but on some issues, you know, you really cross the aisle. And I find that fascinating that you're not a cookie cutter sort of. I mean, wouldn't that have been at least interesting? No. Instead, it was, you know, Letterman was taking bold positions like, teachers should be paid more. I mean, oh my gosh, are we to be spared nothing? So getting back just for a moment to the Libertarian Party situation, you've heard me say this before, but I just can't help repeating it. What astonishes me so much about people, you know, who are critical of me, voices within the Libertarian Party who are critical of me. Here I am. I want to support radical candidates, and I want to take radical libertarian positions. Now, they want to criticize me as some right-wing fuddy-duddy. But yet, when I look at the people they want to support, they want to support boring stuffed shirts who want to, well, we'll slightly legalize this one thing here, but we certainly can't legalize that. Isn't that the kind of candidate I should be expected to support, being the right-wing fuddy-duddy who wants to ruin everybody's fun? Isn't that the sort of person I'm supposed to support? But these are the sorts of people those people are drawn to. Those are the ones that Woods, man, we can't have somebody like that over here. We need real libertarianism. And so for real libertarianism, they go to boring, fall asleep, listening to them Republican governors. Boring. So isn't it, it's just amazing. I'm supposed to be the boring one, right? I'm the boring one. I'm the guy with the car that fits seven people because I have all these kids. You know, I'm the one who does nerdy things all day long, right? I'm the nerd, the goody two shoes. I'm every one of those things. I should be supporting the stuffed shirt. I'm endorsing the radicals out there. And moreover, these are people who, yeah, you know, they're probably more or less anti-war. But if they have a candidate who just doesn't really care or hasn't been that good on that issue in the past, that's never a deal breaker for them. Now, me, I'm tainted forever because, you know, well, Woods wrote something 25 years ago, whatever the heck it is, you know, but these people actually supported an obviously stupid, I mean, the stupidest war in American history. Like Bill Weld supported the stupidest war in American history, the war in Iraq. And they say, oh, but he admits that was a mistake now. Okay, for some reason that works for Weld, but never for Woods, ever. Right? I can't say, well, you know, look, I was a paleocon in those days, you know, and I was even critical of capitalism in the 1990s. I mean, you know, nobody ever bothers me for that for some reason. I wonder why. So, I mean, these are the same people in the Libertarian Party who there's a Libertarian Socialist Caucus. Never do they challenge a single one of those people to a debate. Never. But yeah, this is never a deal breaker for some reason. It's never a deal breaker. If you were like a Walter Jones, that would be one thing, because that guy changed his mind, Congressman Walter Jones, the late Congressman Walter Jones, changed his mind on war and then became just a one-man anti-war machine. He opposed every single intervention. He favored withdrawing troops from as many places as possible. He spoke out against war propagandists in his own party. He wrote 12,000 letters to the families of servicemen who perished. I mean, he could not have been more heroic. Yeah, that was a changed man. But some guy who says, yeah, you know, I guess that was a mistake. Oh, well, Woods, he said it was a mistake. Oh, okay. Well, who am I? And so what I've said is, imagine instead of bombing Baghdad, the U.S. government had bombed Chicago, and Bill Weld had supported bombing Chicago. And then years later, at a time when everybody admitted that bombing Chicago had been a bad idea, he comes along and says, well, yeah, that was a mistake. Really? Are you telling me these people would say, well, look, Woods, he said bombing Chicago was a mistake. I mean, what do you want from the guy? Perfection? They wouldn't say that, would they? They'd say, you know what? I think we're going to need a little bit more than that. We're going to need a little bit more. Huh. So why is that? Why is it that, and I remind you, by the way, these are the same people who are upset that I released an episode on discrimination at the wrong time. These are because they're so racially sensitive, these people, so deeply racially sensitive. But look at this situation. The guy wants to bomb Baghdad, and they turn around and say, hey, you know, nobody's perfect, right? But if he had wanted to bomb Chicago, well, they would never, ever let that go, I would hope, right? So what's the difference? So basically, he bombs a majority white population. Looks like that would really be a sticking point. But if he goes and bombs one of these Middle Eastern countries that they can't find on the map, then, well, you know, hey, nobody's perfect. And these are the people who are going to lecture me on their moral purity. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Libertarianism is not about alternate lifestyles or living in just in any weirdo way that you want or whatever. We're not going to bother you, but that's not what we are. We're about property rights and what flows from property rights. That's what we're about. Non-aggression and property rights. And these two concepts are entwined. That's it. That's libertarianism. The trouble is we have a lot of people who start with, well, these are the sorts of things I personally would like to do. So then let me come up with some grandiose rationalization for things I'd like to do. That's not what we're about. It's private property. It's the division of labor. It's peace. It's all these things that flow from the non-aggression principle and self-ownership. That's what it is. It's not any of your pet projects. None of that. You can do those things as a libertarian in your spare time. But you're not being a libertarian. You're not doing it qua libertarian. And if we could get this through our heads, then we'd have a lot less libertarian infighting. We could just get back to basics. And as we wrap up, let's go back to that initial tweet that caused the whole problem. It ends with this. After having made this distinction between the two types of libertarianism, quote, "Think long and hard about which kind of libertarianism you want to stand behind and support," unquote. Well, I hope you will think long and hard about that, and I hope you will think that the kind of libertarianism I promote, which is just libertarianism, is indeed worth your support, because I would surely welcome it over at supportinglisteners.com. And with that, let me leave you with a new website you can tell was started by a Tom Woods Show listener, because it's called eyeontheempire.com, E-Y-E, of course, eyeontheempire.com. There is a lot of content on this thing. It's updated a lot with a lot of fresh news from a libertarian perspective. There's also a podcast, Eye on 2020, looking at the 2020 election and also the news leading up to the election in 2020. That you guys will really, really enjoy. So give this one a try. Check out eyeontheempire.com, and I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/1365. Make sure you take advantage of what I'm doing for you folks in giving publicity to your website or blog and welcoming you into my private bloggers group, where we have a really good mutual help community and some other great bonuses. You just got to get your hosting through my link and you get all these nice bonuses. So the way to do that is to visit tomwoods.com/publicity. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.